The next case on our calendar is 09-364, State of Ohio versus Darnell Jones. Ms. Shi.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, I would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
What's your time there, clock?
Thank you. I'm here on behalf of the state to ask this court to reverse the Second District Court of Appeals decision finding that a person maintains a privacy interest in property that they leave in a place in which they have since abandoned. A privacy interest is personal. Before a person challenging the search can implicate the Fourth Amendment, they have the burden to demonstrate that at the time of the search, they had a personal privacy interest in the property or the place searched that society is prepared to recognize as objectively reasonable. In this case, Jones has failed to meet this burden.
Whose hotel room was it?
At the time of the suppression hearing and at the time of the search, it was unknown whose room it was. All three occupants had denied that the room was theirs. The officers in this case did not know whose room it was. And specifically, the defendant in this case, Darnell Jones, stated to the officers that it was not his room, thereby abandoning the room and any privacy rights that he would have had in that room at that time.
Well, it was registered to Taylor and Jones paid for it. Isn't that the facts?
Those were the facts at the suppression hearing, yes.
But,
once Jones...
Let me just ask you, I didn't vote to allow this case in the merits. I didn't see an issue of law that this looks like an application of law that we've written a number of times about search and seizure and so forth. What principle of law can we write here that is going to, I read your proposition of law, but it seems too as if it's nothing new there. What can we write here that's going to help judges and lawyers such as yourself?
Well, Mr. Chief Justice, you are absolutely correct. This isn't an area of law that there's anything new about. But the way that the Second District Court of Appeals had written their decision, it is vital that this court clarifies for the state of Ohio that there is no distinction between the nature of a public place versus the nature of a private place when a person fails to establish a privacy interest in the place, whether it be public or the nature of it being public or private. And it is also necessary for this court to clarify for the state of Ohio that when a person abandons their property in a place where they have no expectation of privacy, it also does not matter if the container is opaque or if it's clear.
Again, that's a factual issue, is it not? I mean, there's law written on containers and where they're dropped or if they're not dropped or whether they're opaque or whether they're closed. So there's something we can write here that's going to be helpful?
It would be helpful that this court not allow the Second District Court of Opinion, their Second District Court, their decision to stand. It cannot stand because what it does is it would allow for any defendant to conceal evidence of a crime in any place, whether it be public or private, when they have no expectation that it's going to be kept private. It simply takes out the objective reasonableness component of the test.
Isn't this a case where they really create the best of both worlds for the defendant? You allow him to disavow ownership or control over the area, that is the room, yet extend the benefit of privacy to a possession, here the bag, because it's an opaque bag, and so they would then construe upon acknowledgement of ownership that there is an expectation of privacy in that. So it's kind of a meshing of two concepts, but coming up with, I guess, maybe a result that doesn't support one another with the two concepts.
You're absolutely right. When somebody, and especially in this case, I'll use the facts of this case as an example. It's very clear that Jones did not want the officers to know of his identity, and he was distancing himself from this bag. He didn't want it on his person. In the Second District Court of Appeals actually recognized that fact when they said, understandably, Jones did not want this bag on his person when the police were present. He disassociated himself with it, didn't want to be caught with it, which is the exact opposite of what society recognizes as objectively reasonable. You have to exhibit, manifest, and assert your privacy interest in your property. You cannot leave it behind in a place where you have absolutely no reason to expect that it's going to be kept private, which is exactly what the Second District held in this case, that it doesn't matter as long as it's in a place that has four walls and a door and that it is not in a see-through bag, that they can maintain their privacy interests in it.
Counsel, I have a question about how these arguments played out in the Second District. As I understand, there's two questions here. One is the privacy of the room, and the other is the privacy of the bag that was in the room. And as to the second one, I understand the defendant raised the question about expectation of privacy in the bag in the Court of Appeals, but the state did not reply to that argument, which would indicate that maybe that it was forfeited for discussion here. What would be your response to that?
Your Honor, the state didn't forfeit the right to raise that here. The state maintains and always has since the very beginning that standing was raised in this case, is that if a defendant does not have an expectation of privacy in the place, then they do not have an expectation of privacy in anything that they leave in the place.
Have you read U.S. versus Waller by any chance? It wasn't cited, but it's a case in which a person left a bag in a closet of an apartment. It wasn't his apartment. And he had no expectation of privacy in the apartment. It wasn't his. But the court held he had an expectation of privacy in the bag because it was a personal bag. Now, he haven't cited it, so maybe you can't comment. I don't know if you read it. It seems to me it defeats your argument you just made.
I have not read it, but I would venture to say that anybody who wants to leave anything of theirs in somebody else's place, they need to get permission from the property owner to leave it there. Or they need that permission, in which case the privacy interest of the property owner is extended to the person and the thing that they can leave behind. But I have not specifically read that case and don't know exactly what those facts are. But by gaining permission from the property owner, you, in essence, are manifesting your privacy interest in the object. If I have somebody watch my purse while I go into a public restroom, my privacy interests are maintained by doing that. If I go into a public restroom and leave my purse behind and walk out, I have relinquished any privacy interests I have it because I no longer have the ability to exclude others from it. And when you don't have that ability to exclude others from it, you cannot exclude the police. You
but
cannot
this
challenge
is different
search.
Than a public restroom, isn't it? It's a motel room that somebody rented or paid for, and the bag was in between that. As I understand, between the bed and a nightstand. It wasn't out in open view. I guess why wouldn't somebody have an expectation, just common sense, why wouldn't you have an expectation that nobody's going to go through that bag if it's locked or, I mean, closed? You rented this room, and sure, the police may be able to search the room, but there is a distinction between searching a container and the place in which the container is found. There can be. You don't disagree with that, do you?
There can be, yes. But in this case, when you have him specifically abandoning the room, he doesn't have a right to privacy in that room any longer to exclude others. or even to re-enter the room. He doesn't have that ability any longer. And when he voluntarily, intentionally, and knowingly leaves his property behind in such a place, he has abandoned it.
Well, he was still in the location, was he not? What are the facts? I read the briefs, of course, but I'm not clear. He was still outside the motel room, was he not, or was he?
He was. He was outside.
He was still using the room,
He didn't drive away. And
he had a key to the room, didn't he?
All of these facts demonstrate maybe a subjective expectation of privacy that he may have had in that room, but once he specifically abandons the room, it is no longer objectively reasonable to find that any expectation of privacy that he may have had in the bag still exists.
When you say he abandoned the room, he kept his room key, didn't he?
I don't know if he kept his room key. The fact of the room key did not come out at the time of the search. If we look at the time of the search, the officers didn't know whose room it was, that he had a key, that he still had access to it, that he was ever a tenant, that he paid money down to it, that he had anything to do with that room, except for the fact that it wasn't his room.
Counsel, if I have a man bag or a man purse and I go to the local pizza place for dinner and I set it down in my seat, and I go up to the buffet, would the police be free to search what was in that bag if they were curious?
All of these cases are very factual.
Yeah, well, so is this one. If I ate my pizza and paid and left and forgot my bag, can they search it at that point?
Yes.
Even though the restaurant would customarily see it and put it in a secure place for me to return to claim my property?
Yes. What a person leaves behind to public scrutiny in any case, they have abandoned. And it is a different issue if you have property ownership in that bag, but you have not exhibited a privacy interest in it when you leave it behind in a public place. Your Honors, I can see that my time is very limited for rebuttal.
Thank you, Ms. Shai.
Thank you.
Mr. Wilder.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court. I think the first issue is does Mr. Jones even have a privacy interest in this bag alone? I think there's a long line of case law would suggest this bag that he had a privacy interest in it. I think the second question would be is did he ever abandon the issue? Did he ever abandon the bag in the truest sense? To go a little bit to the facts, Mr. Jones is just outside the apartment and just presented his girlfriend for identification purposes. In order to abandon that bag, as the state would suggest, it's going to have to be along the lines of several other cases where Mr. Jones threw the bag down, he fled the scene, he ran from the cops, he tried to throw it, tried to flush it down the toilet of some sort. He gave no indication he was going to give up that bag.
No, he gave up his girlfriend instead.
He did give up his girlfriend, and I'm assuming he probably gave up the other gentleman that was there with him.
But counsel, didn't he initially inform the police officers with false identification? And is that correct?
There was testimony at the hearing that he said, I have a fake ID, and I think he gave a social security number, which they said didn't kind of match.
Right, then they ran that and the description didn't match his, so they knew that he was not the man or the person he was purporting to be, correct?
Yes.
And they asked him whether that was his hotel room, correct?
Yes, they did.
And he said, no, it's not my room.
Yes.
And the officers had seen him with a bag in his hand when they first came upon him,
yes.
Correct?
Yes.
So, in an attempt to ascertain who this fellow is, was it unreasonable for them to say, well, let's see if there's something in this room that doesn't belong to him to determine? What's wrong with that?
On some level, I guess, but whenever Mr. Jones had provided the fake ID to them, and there was absolutely no basis, no reasonable suspicion even, that this bag had contained anything, contraband or anything illegal in it, Mr. Jones hadn't even indicated, hey, my ID's in the bag, let me go get it.
Did he claim that, hey, that's my bag, leave it alone?
No, there was no questioning about the bag. It was, at the suppression hearing, it was testified, is this your room? Mr. Jones said no. That was it. They walked in and got the bag. There was no discussions, no questions from the officers to Mr. Jones.
And he never objected to them going into the room and restricting them in any way?
From what I gather from the record, he just stood there at the door and they walked in and he didn't try to prevent them from doing it, didn't say, no, you can't do this. There's no indication in the record from the transcript that I've got.
Did he claim ownership of the bag?
At any time, I don't think that it was overtly stated by Mr. Jones, or at least it was not testified to. That's kind of the problem here, is at the suppression hearing, once it was Mr. Jones had told the officer, hey, that's not my room, inquiry completed on the whole issue, so we never even got any testimony about. And I wasn't trial counsel at that time, but we just don't have that in the record.
How is this factually different from a person seeing a cop and throwing a bag down behind the bush and keep walking away versus seeing the cop going back into a room that he tells the cop isn't his and coming out when his first friend's been already arrested? He tells him, well, my girlfriend could drive the car. They run a CAPIUS, her driver's license. She's arrested. He gives them a false ID. I mean, how is that any different from throwing a bag down and running away? You don't want the cops to see it. It's obvious you're trying to get rid of it.
And I would agree with you that on some level, he's obviously got an interest in not giving them that bag. But the difference with the cases with abandonment and fleeing from the police, or at least throwing the drugs down at the last second, there's no intention here demonstrated by Mr. Jones that he is trying to abandon it, that he's just trying to get away from the situation. He's trying to disown the interest.
But he goes and hides it in a room that he says isn't his. Why is that not abandonment?
Well, the difference is when someone's running away, they are demonstrating to the officer at that time, I'm throwing this away from my person. Mr. Jones never did that. He has the bag in his hand and takes it back into the room. He's never trying to throw it. He's never trying to get it away from him overtly as someone who's going to throw it right there in front of the police.
Isn't part of the distinction with abandonment more than merely forgetting something or leaving something behind? It's the idea that you don't intend to claim it later on. You're not going to exercise control over it at some future point. I mean, abandonment has a component of intent, doesn't it?
That's the way I read it. That's the way I argue it, is that there has to be some demonstration that Mr. Jones had no intention of going back in there to get that. Or even if you can't prove his intent specifically, there's enough facts to tell us he ain't coming back. If he runs out of the hotel room and tries to get away from the police, we've got a problem. But he stood around, he cooperated, and I'm assuming that he probably was going to go in to get the bag at some point if everything went okay. But at the end of the day, that's not the final issue. It's whether his rights were violated. But I don't think he demonstrated any intent to abandon that.
Well, Mr. Wilder, the Court of Appeals said that Jones had not abandoned the bag by leaving it in the motel room and in the room to which he still had a key, and that Jones had a reasonable expectation of privacy in that container and its contents, which barred the police from opening or searching it without a warrant. Isn't that the essence of the issue here, or do you see something beyond that?
I think a lot of focus is put on this room. He disowned interest in the room. He said it wasn't mine, so we keep the trial court and the prosecutor were focusing too much on the room itself when he has the interest is in that bag.
Well, it's the room and the bag. That's the point of focus.
Sure.
Correct?
But at the end of the day, it still is the bag. Whether this bag, he's out in the middle of the street with it on a park bench or he's in a motel room, that bag always gets him protection. That's a privacy interest, regardless of where he's at. Now,
to get back to the Chief Justice's question earlier, is there anything new or novel in this case or any new law that we write that isn't already part of the jurisprudence of searching containers or searching rooms?
I don't believe there is, because motion to suppress issues are so fact sensitive, and all we really have is the general area of law, which says a closed container like a plastic bag, an individual has a privacy interest, and the only other issue is abandonment. And on the facts of this case, there's no abandonment. So we really don't have a straight line rule for this specific situation because it's so fact sensitive, like all suppression issues are.
Counsel, what cases have we decided that really focus on the abandonment issues?
From my reading of the cases, I believe State versus Freeman may be the really last attempt where we put where the court put abandonment in a criminal context. And with State versus Freeman, that's completely an opposite here because the gentleman there threw his luggage down as the cops tried to arrest him. And there was no indication of that with Mr. Jones. But to my knowledge, State versus Freeman is the last time.
And you would say that that one provides enough guidance for practitioners to understand what abandonment is?
These suppressive issues, just like I explained, I think it's you have the general rule of law. In this situation, then you have to apply it to the facts. This is not like some of the cases before us today. It's not a bright line test. We have to, here's the general rule, apply it to the facts, and in this case, they just don't fit.
Do you read this case as, if he's walking down the street, sees a cop, he goes over to the bushes and hides his bag in the bushes, not drops it and runs away, but hides the bag in the bushes, comes out and keeps walking. Would you read this decision as protecting that bag?
No, I would not. Now, it's similar in the fact that he took the bag in the hotel room in this situation, but the key difference is there's at least a hint of him having some ownership in this hotel room. He had paid for it. He had a key.
But that's not what he told the officers, and we have to look at what the officers knew. He told them, it's not my room, so why is that any different than the bush?
They saw him go into that hotel room twice. He disavowed it. He said it's not his room, but he's bringing someone out of the room. He had taken a bag into the room, which should have suggested to the officers at least that this guy's coming in and out of this place. He just took a bag into this place, so he must have been there prior to this point. If you just
The test is that somebody goes in and out of a place, they have an expectation of privacy versus some actual ownership interest or possessory interest in the place?
Well, when we get into the what's in the officer's mind, what objective facts are available to him at that point. The officers clearly see him go in and out. They see him take that bag. So those are at least facts to suggest that this gentleman may not only have a possessory interest in the room, but then also with the bag that he's taken in there.
Is there something to write here that would assist in determining when an officer is authorized to open a bag to determine to whom the bag belongs, or he's not certain because of the answers he gets from the person who allegedly owns the bag or apparently owns the bag? Is there a case? I don't know that there's a case like this. Is there where the officer says, "Well, I want to determine his identity, so I open the bag." What's wrong with that?
The problem with that is we don't have any indicia in this case that there was anything in that bag that was criminal, that was contraband. Most of the cases we see in these types of issues are some of the I've cited. You all deal with the cops already knowing that there may be something going wrong.
But here the officer didn't testify that I suspected there'd be drugs or paraphernalia in that bag. He said, I was looking for identification for this man had given me several different stories on who he was, and I know that none of them was accurate, so I thought, well, maybe he's got something in the bag. We're looking for identification. Why is that inappropriate?
Well, it's inappropriate from the stance that he saw the bag, so maybe there's some ID in there. But where do we stop from there? Do we go through the suitcases that are in there? Do we turn the sheets and the beds over just to look for ID? Just because you
have
something you're looking.
Well, if that ever comes before us, we'll cross that bridge. Right now, we're only stuck with the Aldi bag.
There was no evidence that there was any ID in this bag, or there was any evidence of what is contained within
there. Is it
there.
Unreasonable to presume that there may be something in that bag that would identify the character that was carrying it? Maybe a receipt with a name on it. Is that unreasonable for the police officer to pursue that course of conduct when the room is disowned by Mr. Jones? And the officers saw some form of contact between Mr. Jones and that bag.
Unreasonable common sense, probably not, but unreasonable under the Constitution, yes, because in order for him to go through that bag, he's got to have some sort of reasonable suspicion that criminal activity is afoot. Just because he thinks there may be an ID in there we're kind of, I would argue, it's almost like an ends justifying the means. We think it's going to be in there, so let's go through it.
Well, I guess that's the point of my question. Is there a principle of law that applies, or we should apply, that says the officer has no intention of looking for drugs or contraband? He just wants to know there may be a warrant out for this person, and he can't get a name, can't get a correct Social Security number, and yet he's here with this woman who they're apparently going to arrest, and so he wants to know the identity of this person because he won't give it to him. So there's a bag, and it is common sense to assume there may be something in the bag that would help me as the officer identify who this person is, so I know what I'm dealing with, who I'm dealing with. What's unreasonable about that, separate from suspicion or reasonable cause to believe there is contraband?
Well, the officer could have arrested Mr. Jones right there for, I guess, providing a fake ID or false information to him. That doesn't justify the officer at that point just because he believes there's some sort of suspicion with his identification to him to go start roaming through a hotel room.
You're saying the privacy right that one has in their personal belongings is just that, that an officer doesn't have, a law enforcement officer doesn't have a right to go looking through one's billfold or man bag or purse or whatever just because they want to know who you are. Is that?
Well, absent an exception to the warrant, like an incident to an arrest, or he's observed criminal activity.
But he did observe criminal activity. The man gave him false information, and he verified that it was false information. Right then and there, the defendant committed a crime in front of the police officer.
But that doesn't give the officer the right to go get the bag, which he had absolutely no evidence what was contained within there. I mean, is it unreasonable for him to think maybe there's an ID or a receipt in that bag? Sure, but you're crossing that line when you're going into another area and you're getting into someone's clothes
container. So he should have said to Mr. Jones, I saw you with that Aldi's bag in there. Is that yours?
I wish he had, and I bet we might not have been here, but the problem is the question's ended once he said the room's not his, and then they go in. But based upon the facts we got here, we don't have that information, so we can only, you know, fathom that the officers, as soon as they heard it's not your room, they go in and take the bag. And when he has that bag, it's secured, it's tied, it's stuffed. He's obviously trying to hide something, but at the same time, that's his privacy interest in that bag, just as it is the justices at the pizza place. While you don't necessarily know the criminal intent of the individual at that time, you look at the facts and circumstances, and Mr. Jones is not presenting something where he's trying to avoid something overtly, where the police can see that he's doing something wrong, or they have any suspicion that he's done something wrong.
At the suppression hearing, did he admit that it was his bag?
There's no testimony about the bag at the suppression hearing. Mr. Jones did not testify at the suppression hearing, and no officer testified in that manner.
Thank you, Mr. Wilder. Ms. Shy, you've saved 2.5 minutes of your time.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. With the time I have left, I want to bring to the court's attention a couple cases. First is Freeman. We've got property that is behind in a public place, has been abandoned in a public place, which has been held by this court to be abandoned property. We've got the case of State versus Buzzard, where you have a person's home in the garage that has a hole in it, which exposes the contents of the garage to public scrutiny, that has been held to have no privacy protection in the contents of the garage, even though it is a private place. And more importantly, there's a case of the U.S. versus Figueroa. It's a first district case out of Rhode Island that is cited in my brief that the state would ask this court to consider and adopt its reasoning. In that case, a defendant is running from the police and conceals an opaque bag, a container, that has evidence of a crime in it, guns and drugs and ammunition. He hides it and conceals it in his neighbor's apartment, which is by nature a private place. He argued that because he concealed it in a private place, that he maintained an expectation of privacy in it, and the officers could not then search the container. The court found that he had abandoned that container because he left it in a place where he had no right to expect that it was going to be kept private.
So there are a number of cases, apparently, from which judges and lawyers can determine on a factual basis whether these facts fit any of these tests, aren't there?
Absolutely.
Are there, what, would you have any, you want to comment on the question we've asked Mr. Wilder about the authority of a law enforcement officer to search a bag where, let's assume, the officer doesn't have any objective belief that the that there is contraband, but he wants to find, wants to determine who this person is because the person won't give him his name, accurate name. Is there, are there any cases on that that you know of that, that, that authorize an officer either yes or no on the issue?
If an officer has probable cause to believe that evidence of a crime is concealed.
No. Officer, well, the crime here is lying to the officer. That's all, the only, let's assume that's the only crime we have. And the officer said, well, there's a bag. I saw you with the bag, so I'm going to go get the bag, and maybe the bag will tell me who you are, so I know whether there's a warrant for you or whatever. Is the officer authorized to do that, do you think? Or is there a restriction on, privacy restriction on his searching that bag just to find the ID?
Well, in this case, Mr. Jones did commit a felony. The officer explained at the motion to suppress that by having a fake ID and admitting to it, he did commit a felony, and he wasn't getting any information about who he was. The description given did not match his description, or the social didn't match his description. He didn't know who he was. He said he went in, he was investigating this crime, he knew he had the bag on him beforehand, and there could be an ID in there. He was looking for his identification. Can he do that? I would submit that he could. But before a person, before the Fourth Amendment is even implicated by reasonable suspicion or probable cause to search something, it is the defendant's, the person who is challenging the search of the item, to demonstrate that they have a right to privacy in it, first and foremost. And until
they have
to
demonstrate that on the spot to the police officer by objecting to the search and establishing ownership at the time, or remaining silent and while the police officer searches for the ID. How does that impact?
The person, when it comes to property, the person has to demonstrate or manifest or exhibit some kind of privacy interest in the property by keeping it on their person, being in possession of it, by keeping it close by so they can prevent anybody else from searching it, by asserting that the bag is theirs. By doing at the time of the search, it has to be at the time of the search, not at the suppression hearing, which coincidentally the defendant did not testify. Never once did he exhibit any privacy interest in this bag. And he abandoned the room in which he left it behind.
Counsel, under Freeman, there is the intent test. Would you agree with that? The intent not to come back and recover the property? Would you agree that that's what we've said in Freeman as to abandonment?
Yes, of whether or not the bag was intentionally and voluntarily left behind.
And not it, that there was not going to be recovery of the property later by the person.
Whatever a defendant subjectively believes in whether or not he was going to come back and get it, and the state would submit that in every abandonment case, whether it is left in a private place or a public place, we all have to admit the defendant has a subjective intention that he's going to try to go back and retrieve what he left behind. And whatever that subjective intention may be, it's if it's not objectively reasonable, they cannot challenge the search. If it's left to public scrutiny, they cannot challenge the search. And in this case, Jones did not meet his burden of demonstrating that he exhibited, asserted, or manifest any reasonable expectation of privacy in the bag that he left in a motel room in which he later abandoned and disowned.
Thank you, Ms. Shai.
Thank you.
Case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.